program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News. Thank you to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we'll bring you news from the Spencer New Leader and the Athol Daily News. Today, I will be reading from the Spencer New Leader's July 17th, 2026 edition, and we'll be reading from various dates from the Athol Daily News. I'm Walter Byrd with Audio Journal, and we begin with news from the Spencer New Leader, a publication of Stonebridge Press News, which is free by request to residents of East Brookfield, West Brookfield, North Brookfield, Brookfield, Leicester, and Spencer. Again, this is the Friday, July 17th, 2026 edition. Our first story by correspondent Jason Blue, North Brookfield seeking phone-free school support grant. The North Brookfield School District is one of many across the state seeking funds to help adapt its regulations to meet new expected state regulations regarding student cell phone access during school hours. In June, North Brookfield Superintendent Timothy McCormick told the school committee he has applied for a phone-free school support grant through the Massachusetts Office of the Attorney General. The funding is meant to provide financial assistance for districts to implement bell-to-bell cell phone policies while a bill is being considered in Boston that would outright ban the use of cell phones during the school day. As of this writing, the latest round of grant funding had yet to be awarded. The state has allocated $500,000 for the grant program to assist qualifying districts throughout the Commonwealth to create phone-free school environments during instructions and unstructured periods of the school day. Quote, there's a fair certainty that by the end of the summer there will be a law in place that will limit cell phone use for all students from bell to bell. So when they enter the building to when they leave the building, their cell phones need to be put away in some sort of device or locked up where there's no access during the school day, end quote, McCormick said during the school committee's June 15th meeting. If the bill were implemented, it would require a significant change of policy for many school districts as cell phone use is still more widely accepted in the hallways. A recent push to reduce the impact of phones as distractions and help protect students from the effects of social media exposure has caused many districts to take it upon themselves to change their policies even before the House bill gets approved. Though if Brookfield appears to be taking that same approach, McCormick said the grant would allow them the means to pay for tools that would restrict student access to their phones during the regular school day. McCormick said, quote, this grant fund of just north of $10,000 will help the district purchase what are called yonder pouches, which is what students will use to put their devices in when they enter the building. They will be sealed magnetically, and when they exit the building, they will unseal these pouches, end quote. With these new pouches, the district would not relinquish students' phones, instead allowing them to keep them on their person accessible to them only after the pouch locks release when they leave the building. The expected cost of the actual pouches would be $8,000, with the remaining funds paying for marketing and other related expenses. Next up, Spencer hosts first annual Savage Foundation Mini Golf Classic. This is also by correspondent Jason Blue out of Spencer. Blue writes, the Spencer Fairgrounds played host to a new kind of fundraiser the weekend of July 11th, the first annual Savage Foundation Mini Golf Classic. This multi-day event allowed visitors to take part in a mini golf course for a small entry fee with every hole designed by different participating families or entities, with all the proceeds helping support the mission of the Savage Foundation. The foundation was formed last year by Jeff and Jackie Savageau to help tackle food insecurity in local communities and promote educational growth through scholarships and learning. When planning what they hoped would become their first major annual fundraiser, Jeff Savageau said they wanted to do something a little different that would cater to families and the larger community. Savageau said, quote, we want to come up with an event that wasn't a cornhole tournament or a normal golf tournament. We wanted to do something outside of the box. We decided, let's try mini golf. The foundation is really focused on the community, just empowering everybody, so we worked with local businesses and individuals who all created their own mini golf holes, end quote. The first event included custom-made mini golf holes designed around the theme of family game night. Classic games like Yahtzee, Sorry, Hungry Hungry Hippos, and Operation were all present in the form of unique holes spread throughout the Spencer Fairgrounds. As the concept for the event grew, vendors, food trucks, a raffle, and live music quickly became part of the larger picture, creating 2 days of family fun for a good cause. The day also had DCF on hand to provide information about fostering children and summer eats to promote kids eating free for the summer. Donations were accepted throughout the weekend for the Mary Queen of the Rosary Parish, with the foundation matching those donations can for can. Savageau said, quote, ultimately we wanted to create an event to raise awareness and raise funds, but also bring the community together. The turnout is amazing. Watching the first 3 to 5 families walk in right as we opened, it was almost like it cracked all the nerves. It kind of broke me down emotionally and really said people were going to show up. We wanted this to be more than just something that was happening, and I feel we've created something for everybody, end quote. Savageau thanked the major sponsors of the event, Mercury Wire, Cornerstone Bank, and the lead sponsor, Webster First Federal Credit Union, for helping make the day possible, and acknowledged they already have participants lining up to be part of next year's Classic. Artisan James Caldwell, named by Friends of the North Brookfield Townhouse as Artist of the Month. Out of North Brookfield, James Caldwell has been named Artist of the Month for July by the Friends of the North Brookfield Townhouse. A man of many talents and interests, Caldwell never really considered himself to be an artist. However, the way he fashions raw materials into decorative objects proves he is every bit as creative and artistic as a painter or sculptor. Caldwell began woodworking as a child, honing skills taught to him by his grandfather, a farmer and machinist who, in his eyes, could make anything. While helping with everyday jobs on the farm, it became evident to Jim that knowing how to work with wood was a necessity. Later in life, he came to appreciate woodworking as a hobby and started to enjoy the craft by approaching it from an historical perspective. Rather than using power tools, he began creating results with hand tools that had been used by tradesmen for hundreds of years. Caldwell's projects usually start with an idea or mental image that pops into his head, and they progress to his finding the right materials and the correct hardware for the job. He uses wood other craftsmen have passed over because of wild grain structure or woods that just don't measure up to the quality standards of others. He studies a board to find its best side or looks for hidden images that, if constructed in just the right way, will provide for a background to enhance a certain inlay. Throughout the process, Jim stays flexible regarding changes to the design. Caldwell prefers to do what he calls casework. Small tables with drawers, period wall cupboards, chests and wall shelves and boxes, keepsake boxes and jewelry boxes. He aims for heirloom quality and wants each of his pieces to become part of the story. Most of his work has been given away to people who have a need for something that can be theirs alone, not bought, but chosen just for them. Perhaps a keepsake box for someone who has lost a loved one, or a jewelry box for a foster child whose only worldly belongings are carried in a trash bag. As time has passed, Jim's projects tend to have more inlay work. He finds it a challenge and very rewarding to do inlay using only hand chisels and fine veneers. Caldwell doesn't consider his work a career and finds his reward in the joy the finished product brings to the new owner and the hope that it may become the one item that will be passed on from generation to generation. His greatest honor, received 2 years after the fact, was a thank you letter from the grandparents of a Sandy Hook victim to whom he had sent the box he had made and had blessed at his local parish. He says their heartfelt comments will be with them always. He admits he is what some would call an old-school woodworker who combines hand tools that were made and used in the 1800s with skills developed over his lifetime to create a rewarding and relaxing experience. He believes it is up to this generation to try to maintain the skills of the past so they are not forgotten. He practices what he preaches as a longtime volunteer at Old Sturbridge Village, where he focuses on tinning and bookbinding. A valued member of the community, Caldwell served the town of North Brookfield as a selectman and town meeting moderator for many years, and has worked to repair and conserve the townhouse and its history. In his spare time, he restores, repairs, and maintains antique and classic automobiles at Parker's Packers. You can find additional information about Jim Caldwell and photos of his work at nbtownhouse.com/featured artists. And our next story this week on the front page of the Spencer New Leader, Love Dogs next up in Spencer Summer Concert Series. The Spencer Parks and Recreation Commission 2026 Summer Concert Series continued Sunday, July 19th at Powder Mill Park, the corner of Smithville and Meadow Roads in Spencer, with the Love Dogs. Take one red hot horn section, add liberal amounts of Barrel House boogie boogie piano, stinging Fender guitar, and a funky and swinging rhythm section that Blues Review magazine called the best in the business, and top it all off with a crazy charismatic frontman with one of the biggest blues voice around, and you've got the Love Dogs. The band is seasoned with years on the road, tearing up jukebox joints, concert halls, and festivals, while releasing 4 critically acclaimed CDs. It's a recipe for music, mayhem, intensity, and irreverence. It's the Love Dogs. Next up in the series that runs through August 23rd will be Vivi and the Funk on July 26th. The concert series is proudly sponsored by Cornerstone Bank. East Brookfield Library offers summer activities, crafts for children and families. The East Brookfield Public Library is inviting children and families to take part in a variety of summer activities designed to encourage creativity, learning, and fun. The library's weekly activity and play program will be held Tuesdays at 10:30 a.m. as an extension of the library's storytime program. Caregivers are required to remain with participating children, with one adult required for every two children. A series of special afternoon activities begins at 2 p.m. throughout the summer. The schedule included paper airplane making, which was on June 30th, cornhole, which was held July 7th, sidewalk chalk drawings, which was held July 14th, and up next, bubbles on July 21st, origami July 28th, bracelet making August 4th, and a guided tour of the library pond on August 11th. The library started hosting a summer arts and crafts program on June 23rd, and the additional sessions coming up on the 21st of July and the 4th and 18th of August, and all programs starting at 11 a.m. Registration is required for the Arts and Crafts program. Adult caregivers must attend with children under age 12, with one adult required for every two children. Some projects may continue into the following week's session. Library officials encourage families to register early and participate in the wide range of educational and recreational activities planned throughout the summer. For more information or to register, contact the East Brookfield Public Library. Workshop 13 seeks artists for 8th Annual Northeast Fine Arts Exhibition. This is what's next in this week's Smithsonian Leader. Workshop 13 invites artists from throughout the northeastern U.S. to participate in the 8th Annual Juried Northeast Fine Arts Exhibition. This is out of Ware, and the exhibition aims to showcase art that embodies the principles of realism, highlighting the beauty of precise representation. Submitting artworks should fall into one of the various styles of realism, from traditional to imaginative. Works are welcomed in the following categories: oil painting, watercolor, sculpture, drawing graphics, acrylic, including case-in and egg tempera, pastel, and mixed media. Awards will be granted in multiple categories, with Best in Show receiving $1,000. The deadline for entry was July 17th. You can visit workshop13.org for full details. The annual exhibition is held in the unique Grand Hall Gallery of Workshop 13, a non-profit cultural arts and learning center located at 13 Church Street in Ware. The exhibition will be on display from August 22nd through September 6th and can be visited Fridays from 4 to 7 p.m. and Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 4 p.m. The show will open with a reception from 1 to 4 p.m. on August 22nd, with awards announced at 3 p.m. The juror for the 8th Annual NEFAE is Scott Pryor. Born in Exeter, New Hampshire, Pryor received a BFA in printmaking from the University of Massachusetts in 1971. He has artwork in the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, the De Cordova Museum, the Danforth Museum, the New Britain Museum of American Art, the Rose Art Museum, and other major public and private collections. He has shown extensively in one-person and group shows in the United States and abroad. In 2001, he had a mid-career retrospective at the De Cordova Museum. Pryor was represented by the Alpha Gallery in Boston and William Bazlack Fine Arts in Northampton, Mass. Artworks Gallery invites art lovers to land escape. Out of Ware, Workshop 13's Artworks Gallery in Ware presents a new exhibition called Land Escape. This exhibition aims to expand or even reimagine the traditional landscape as a personal sanctuary and to document the diverse spatial forms of escapism that we need to recharge our spirits. Artworks Gallery is located at 69 Main Street in Ware. Land Escape is on display through August 2nd. Gallery hours are Saturday and Sundays, 1 to 4 p.m. For those who cannot attend the show in person, a virtual gallery is available for viewing at workshop13.org. That's workshop, the number 13.org. Fine artist Shona McDonald served as the juror for Land Escape. Kathy Halper was awarded Best in Show for her striking painting, Tree Shadows. Halper is self-taught, an exhibiting artist with 30-plus years of experience and a portfolio of work ranging from painting, mixed media, and textiles to sculpture. Career highlights include exhibition opportunities at Art Basel Miami, gallery representation in New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago, a profile in Huffington Post, as well as other international publications. Porter Gifford received an honorable mention. Work on paper for Pool Number 3174, Concord, Mass., and Jackie Boudreaux Kinsey received an honorable mention. Painting for Shive Light Dream. Three works received an honorable mention. Creative Interpretation, Constellation by Kay Vale, Refuge, Azores Beach by Richard Wallman, and Small Feather by Kathy Durso. Each of these artists and their works will be spotlighted on Workshop 13's social media pages as well as in their weekly newsletter. All the editorial is up next in this week's Spreads the New Leader, titled Building Community One Whole at a Time. There is no shortage of worthy causes competing for attention these days. Food insecurity, educational opportunity, and support for families are challenges every community faces in one form or another. Raising money to address those needs is important. Finding ways to bring neighbors together while doing it may be even more valuable. That is what made the first Savage Foundation mini golf classic at the Spencer Fairgrounds stand out. It would have been easy to organize another golf tournament, road race, or raffle. Those events have their place and have raised significant funds for countless organizations over the years. Instead, Jeff and Jackie Savageau and the Savage Foundation deliberately chose something different. A miniature golf course built by local families, businesses, and organizations around the theme of family game night was imaginative, welcoming, and accessible to nearly everyone. That matters. Not every fundraiser is designed for all ages. Some appeal primarily to golfers, runners, or adults attending evening galas. Miniature golf, however, has a unique ability to bring grandparents, parents, teenagers, and young children together. Success is measured less by the scorecard than by laughter, conversation, and shared memories. The event grew beyond the course itself. Food trucks, local vendors, live music, raffles, and community organizations transformed the fairgrounds into a gathering place. Information about foster care was available through the Department of Children and Families. Summer Eats helped spread the word about Free Meals for Children. Donations were collected for Mary, Queen of the Rosary Parish, with the Savage Foundation matching contributions. Every element reinforced the idea that communities become stronger when organizations work alongside one another rather than separately. That spirit deserves recognition. The Savage Foundation's mission of addressing food insecurity and supporting education through scholarships tackles two needs that affect communities in every season. Families struggling to put food on the table often face barriers that extend into the classroom. Students who have educational opportunities are better equipped to strengthen their communities in return. Those goals are connected, and the Foundation's work recognizes that reality. Equally encouraging was the involvement of local businesses and sponsors. Mercury Wire, Cornerstone Bank, Webster First Federal Credit Union, and others demonstrated that supporting a community means more than writing a check. It means investing in events that create connections between neighbors while advancing worthwhile causes. Perhaps the most meaningful moment came when Jeff Savageau described watching the first families arrive as the gates opened. After months of planning, there is always uncertainty about whether people will actually show up. They did, and their presence confirmed something important about Spencer and the surrounding communities. People still want opportunities to gather. They want events where children can play, neighbors can reconnect, local organizations can share their missions, and everyone leaves knowing they helped someone else. Those opportunities have become increasingly valuable in a world where so much interaction happens through screens instead of face-to-face. The success of the Sinagua Mini Golf Classic suggests it may become more than an annual fundraiser. It has the potential to become a community tradition, one that evolves each year with new course designs, new participants, and even greater impact. Communities are built through thousands of small moments. A family putting through a homemade Hungry Hungry Hippo's hole. A child learning about fostering or free summer meals. A conversation between neighbors who had not seen each other in months. A donation that helps stock a food pantry or fund a scholarship. None of those moments alone changes a town. Together, they strengthen it. The Savage Foundation's first mini golf classic proved that sometimes the best way to address serious needs begins with a simple invitation. Come together, have some fun, and make a difference. And that is a tradition well worth growing. Next up, it's Lanterns Along Main Street, the column by Charles. This week's column titled, The Last Place You Can Still Wander. Charles writes, there are fewer and fewer places these days where you can simply wander. Everything seems to have a purpose now. We drive to the store because we need something. We head to work because we have to. Even a walk is often measured by a smart watch that reminds us how many steps we've taken, how fast we walked, and whether our heart rate was acceptable. Somehow we've managed to turn wandering into another assignment. But every once in a while, I find myself in an old hardware store. Not one of the giant warehouse places where you need a map to find a box of screws. I mean the kind of hardware store with wooden floors that creak just enough to let everyone know you've arrived. The place where shovels stand in one corner, fishing lures somehow occupy another, and there's always a mysterious shelf full of oddball parts that haven't changed since the Reagan administration. I never get through one of those stores in less than half an hour. It's impossible. You walk in looking for a hose washer, and suddenly you're examining cast iron hooks that would look good in the garage. Then you notice birdseed on sale. Around the corner is a display of flashlights that makes you wonder if yours still works. Before long, you're comparing paintbrushes, even though you haven't painted anything in years. None of it is urgent. None of it was on the list. That's the beauty of it. When I was younger, I thought efficiency was the goal. Get in, get out, cross another errand off the list. Now I'm beginning to appreciate places that don't rush you. The best hardware stores aren't really selling tools, they're selling possibilities. You start imagining projects you'll probably never tackle. Maybe this is finally the year you repair that loose porch step. Perhaps you organize the workshop. You stand there holding a packet of vegetable seeds, briefly convinced you're about to become the sort of fellow who grows prize-winning tomatoes. Then your wife gently reminds you that the last basil plant barely survived because you kept forgetting to water it. She's usually right. What I enjoy most, though, are the conversations. Someone asks where to find a particular bolt, and another customer answers before an employee has the chance. Advice travels up and down the aisles as naturally as if everyone were old neighbors. Nobody seems bothered by the interruption. That doesn't happen very often anymore. In most places, people stare at their phones while waiting in line. At the hardware store, they're debating the best way to remove a stripped screw or whether oil-based stain still beats the newer products. Somehow, complete strangers become temporary teammates, united by whatever stubborn home repair project brought them there. I suspect that's one reason these stores have survived when so many small businesses haven't. They offer something that can't be delivered to your front porch in 2 days. They offer human nature. Of course, I rarely leave with only what I intended to buy. Somehow, a $5 errand becomes a small bag full of things that might come in handy someday. My garage is living proof that someday hasn't arrived yet. Still, I don't regret it. Those little detours through the aisles remind me that not every minute needs to be optimized. Not every trip needs to be timed. Sometimes it's enough to simply wander, discover something unexpected, exchange a few words with a stranger, and head home feeling like the afternoon was well spent. That's getting harder to find. So if you happen to disappear for a while on a Saturday morning, don't worry if you haven't traveled very far. You might just be wandering through the last place where nobody expects you to be in a hurry. And honestly, I think we could all use a little more of that. Next up, Financial Focus, debunking 5 common Social Security myths. Social Security is often one of the most important income sources in retirement, yet widespread myths about how it works can lead to confusion, unnecessary worry, and poor planning decisions. Here's the truth behind 5 of the most common misconceptions. Myth 1, Social Security is going broke. You've probably heard this one, but the full picture is more nuanced. According to the 2026 Social Security Board of Trustees report, if Congress does nothing, the program would need to reduce benefits starting in 2032, paying roughly 78 cents for every dollar owed. But that's just one scenario. Congress could raise a combined payroll tax from 12.4 to 16.65%, which the trustees estimate would secure full benefits through 2100. Other options include eliminating the earnings cap subject to payroll tax or adjusting retirement ages. Lawmakers have tools to address this. Myth 2. Social Security will cover all of your retirement needs. Think of Social Security as a financial foundation, not the full building. According to the Social Security Administration, benefits replace only about 40% of pre-retirement income for a median earner. That means you'll likely need to account for most of your retirement income yourself. Building a strong personal savings strategy now can help close that gap. Myth 3. You lose benefits permanently if you keep working. Not true. Social Security does have an earnings test that can temporarily reduce benefits for people who claim early and keep working. If your earnings exceed a set annual cap, which changes each year, Social Security will withhold a portion of your benefits. But once you reach full retirement age, the Social Security Administration adjusts your monthly check higher to repay those withheld amounts over time. Myth 4. An ex-spouse's benefits come out of your own. If you were married for at least 10 years and are currently unmarried, your former spouse may be eligible to collect on your earnings record, or you may be able to collect on theirs. Divorced spouse benefits can be up to 50% of the other person's full retirement benefit. But those payments don't affect yours. Your monthly benefit is not reduced by anything paid to an ex-spouse or even a current spouse. Myth 5. Social Security benefits are no longer taxed. Recent legislation caused some confusion here. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act did not eliminate taxes on Social Security benefits. If your combined income exceeds certain thresholds, you'll still own taxes on a portion of your benefits. The law also created a temporary deduction available through 2028 for people 65 and older. Eligible taxpayers can deduct $6,000 per qualifying filer in their modified adjusted gross if their modified adjusted gross income is $75,000 or less for singles, or $150,000 for couples. The deduction phases out at $175,000 for singles and $250,000 for joint filers. The more you understand Social Security, the more control you have over your retirement outcome. Grounding your decisions in facts rather than assumptions can make a meaningful difference in your long-term financial security. Up next, Leicester Democratic Town Committee plans second annual potluck barbecue. The Leicester Democratic Town Committee invites Democrats from across central Massachusetts to gather for an afternoon of food, conversation, and community at its second annual potluck barbecue. The event is designed to bring together local residents and party members to reconnect with friends, meet new people, exchange ideas, and strengthen relationships ahead of the upcoming election season. Organizers encourage attendees to bring a favorite dish to share while enjoying an informal afternoon focused on fellowship and civic engagement. In the event announcement, organizers said, quote, "Come together with Democratic friends from across local Mass for an afternoon of great food, laughter, and meaningful conversation. It's a chance to reconnect with old friends, make new ones, share ideas, and strengthen the relationships that will help us work together during the upcoming election season." Participants are asked to bring a potluck item and are encouraged to RSVP by Sunday, August 16th. Registration is required as the event location will only be provided to those who register in advance. Organizers said they hope attendees will leave with new connections, fresh ideas, and renewed enthusiasm for the months ahead. For more information or to register, visit the Leicester Democratic Town Committee website at ldtcmass.org. And we have an obituary this week. Anne Adelaide Grahowski. Anne Adelaide Perrin Grahowski, 78, passed away peacefully July 4th with her family by her side. Anne courageously faced a complex triple diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, Lewy body dementia, and Parkinson's disease, and fought with unrelenting determination until her last breath. She is survived by her daughters, Cheryl Erskine of New York, New York, Monica Grahowski and son-in-law Paul Carboni of Boston, as well as her cherished grandchildren or darlings, Lindsay Gibbons of Uxbridge, Ryan Gibbons of Millbury, Grace Gibbons of Baltimore, Maryland, Zivy Gibbons of South Boston, Sophia Carboni of Quincy, Ava Carboni of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Jake Gibbons of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. In addition, Anne leaves behind her siblings, John Perrin, and sister-in-law Anne Marie Corrieri of Wilbraham, Robert Perrin and sister-in-law Cynthia of Burlington, Vermont, and Demetria Peterson and brother-in-law Rodney of Munson, Mass. Anne is also survived by beloved nieces and nephews, countless friends, and many former colleagues. Joyously, after a 13-year wait, Anne will be reunited with her husband and true love, William Grahowski, who predeceased her in 2013. Born October 4, 1947, Anne lived most of her life in Warren, Mass. She was a graduate of Warren High School and later earned a bachelor's degree in business administration from Wesley College. Anne was selfless and kind. To know her was to love her. She relished making guests feel at home, eagerly embracing new visitors and old friends alike. More than anything, Anne's life was devoted to her family. She cherished her roles as wife, mother, grandmother, or Gima, daughter, and sister. Among many treasured memories, Anne instills her deep love of Rhode Island's beaches in her daughters and grandchildren, a legacy that lives in the salt air of Esquimalt and Quine. Join Annie's family in celebrating her life August 8, 2026 at Varnum Funeral Home, 43 East Main Street, Westbrookfield, Mass., 01585. Calling hours are 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. with a reception for sharing and memories to follow from 5 to 8 p.m. at the barn at White Farm, 420 Main Street, Sturbridge, Mass., 01566. In lieu of flowers, consider toasting her with a glass of sangria or making a donation to Mass General Hospital's Brain Donation Hub using the link giving.brighamandwomens.org/give. You may designate donations to the Brain Donation Hub's research program by choosing Other and writing Brain Donation Hub in the text box. Alternately, those donating via check can make a donation payable to Brigham and Women's Hospital and mail to MGB Development Office, 399 Revolution Drive, Suite 1330, Somerville, Mass., 02145. Kindly note, the gift is a tribute to Anne Grahowski. We read now from the Athol Daily News. This story is July 19th, 2026. Madison Schofield, the writer, state legislators celebrate budget wins for Franklin County, North Quabbin. Among the spending allocations in the $63.4 billion fiscal 2027 state budget, legislators representing Franklin County and the North Quabbin region secured $1.28 million to support the work of organizations such as Bay State Franklin Medical Center's Family Medicine Residency Program and the Opioid Task Force. State Senator Joe Comerford, a Democrat from Northampton, who served as vice chair on the Senate Committee on Ways and Means, said in a statement that the budget Governor Maura Healey signed on July 9th includes funding for state agencies that serve residents of Western Mass, as well as money for local projects that can help communities manage rising costs, particularly during a time when federal funding for local projects remains uncertain. Quote, this budget proposal reflects the Senate's commitment to meet this moment with urgency, compassion, skill, and resolve. As residents and communities across Massachusetts face rising costs and constant uncertainty, this proposal makes critical investments in food security, health care, education, and municipal support. While we cannot fully address the hardships stemming from federal cuts, this budget works to protect essential services and to guard against further harm, end quote, Comerford said. Comerford highlighted $620,000 in funding she helped secure for Franklin County and the North Quabbin, including $250,000 for Bay State Franklin Medical Center in Greenfield to support its Family Medicine Residency Program, $100,000 for the Franklin Regional Council of Governments to improve the delivery of emergency medical services in Franklin County, $75,000 for Stone Soup Cafe to support its work fighting food insecurity in Greenfield, $70,000 for the Franklin County Community Meals Program, $50,000 for the Town of Royalston for design and repair of the King Street Bridge, $25,000 for the Friends of the Wendell Meeting House to support accessibility improvements and the meeting house's maintenance. State Senator Paul Mark, Democrat of Beckett, said state funding helps move projects from idea to reality, and this year's budget, including $325,000 he helped secure for Western Franklin County, will help make a difference over the region. In a statement, Mark said, quote, one of the most important parts of this job is listening to the people who know their communities best and then working to deliver the resources they need. These investments will help our schools educate students, support first responders and behavioral health services, strengthen local nonprofits, improve transportation, and make our community stronger. I'm proud to have worked with my colleagues in the legislature to make sure these dollars are coming back to Western Mass, where they'll make a real difference, end quote. Mark highlighted $25,000 secured for the Mary Lyon Foundation in Buckman, which works to support students and families across the region, $200,000 for Berkshire Educational Resources K-12, or Burke 12, to cover its work on the Mohawk Trail and Hallamont Regional School District Sustainability Study, and $150,000 for the Opioid Task Force of Franklin County and the North Quabbin Region for continued opioid education and outreach. State Rep. Susanna Whips, an independent of Athol, also celebrated the funding she helped secure for the Opioid Task Force, as well as money for other North Quabbin projects. The North Quabbin Community Coalition will get $25,000, the Friends of Quabbin will receive $35,000, and the North Quabbin Chamber of Commerce is budgeted to receive $25,000. Additionally, $100,000 has been set aside for Quabbin Mediation's Training Active Bystanders Program through the Franklin County Sheriff's Office, and in Greenfield, Just Roots Community Farm will receive $50,000. Peterson will be getting $50,000 for ambulance services and a ramp at the municipal offices, which Representative Aaron Saunders, a D Democrat of Belchertown, said represents the state working to equitably invest in small rural communities. Saunders said, quote, in Peterson, we were able to secure $25,000 for a new ADA ramp. Accessing our public spaces should be equitable. It's hard to ask our very small communities to take on these projects, end quote. Saunders added that Quabbin Days, which he helped secure funding for along with Whips, helped its inaugural event last year, and he hopes state funding this year will help make the event even better and showcase all the Quabbin has to offer. Saunders said he worked with Comerford and Whips and other members of the Western Mass delegation to push for equitable funding for the region and teach their eastern counterparts about the unique challenges of rural communities. Said Saunders, quote, overall, the theme of this year's budget was ensuring we were equitably investing in our small communities. I think we took some steps forward, but we have significantly more to go. There's lots of broad steps we took with Franklin County and Western Mass in general in mind, end quote. In addition to funding for specific Franklin County and North Quabbin projects, the state budget also included funds for regional initiatives in Western Mass, such as $137,877 for the Northampton-based Friends of Children Incorporated for its court-appointed special advocate program in Franklin and Hampshire counties. Another $50,000 is supporting Girls on the Run Western Massachusetts for physical education curriculum in elementary and middle schools. In Franklin County, Girls on the Run has programs at Buckland Shelburne Elementary School, Coleraine Central School, Deerfield Elementary School, Greenfields Federal Street School, and Orange's Fisher Hill Elementary School. In a statement, Whip said, quote, "Of course, I'm grateful to my colleagues who vote in favor of these budget bills. One person doesn't get anything done on their own, as everything is very collaborative. When there is a win in the community, it's a win for all of us. I enjoy having the opportunity to talk about my amendments with colleagues and tell them about projects that are ongoing or wish lists that my communities have," end quote. In addition to the money included for these various organizations and regional efforts, more than $64.5 million has been allocated in Chapter 70 educational funding and $13.7 million in unrestricted general government aid for towns and regional school districts across Franklin County. Approximately $26.06 million is set for the Franklin County Sheriff's Office, $16.4 million for Greenfield Community College, $10.6 million for the Northwestern District Attorney's Office, $456,230 for costs associated with state police assigned to the Northwestern DA's office, and $732,774 for the Franklin County Registry of Deeds. Saunders said he hopes to continue work to equitably fund rural communities in future budgets, with particular attention to school funding. State legislators are also currently working to review a $100 supplemental budget for public schools, which Saunders called a, quote, "continued opportunity to invest," end quote, in area communities. A, quote, "One of the most significant pieces that ties this year's budget to next year's is rural school aid and the reestablishment of the Foundation Budget Review Commission," end quote, Saunders said. He was referencing a new group tasked with reexamining the Chapter 70 funding formula. And he continued, quote, "I'm looking forward to working with the Foundation Budget Review Commission to ensure changes center around rural communities. I'm hopeful we're going to have some wholesale change in rural school aid," end quote. Up next, Healy seeks $100 million more for schools days after signing budget. This is from State Health News Service's Sam Drysdale, who writes, "Less than a week after signing the new state budget, Governor Maura Healey filed a supplemental budget on Wednesday seeking an extra $100 million for public schools. Her announcement comes amid a tough budget cycle for schools across the state, which have had to make cuts to teachers, staff, and services. Many communities have been forced to make difficult decisions between raising their own taxes or cutting school funding. Healey said during a press conference at the State House, quote, "In this moment, I want our teachers, our educators, our counselors, our schools to know they have our support. I want our students and towns to know they have our support as well. We don't want to see these programs, these services, or these positions cut because of these tough budgets," end quote. The move comes as Healey is campaigning for a second term, asking voters to deliver her back to the corner office in November. The strain on municipal budgets has been among the largest challenges this session and a repeated campaign theme. Education Secretary Stephen Zreike said, quote, "We have seen and heard the challenge we face to ensure that mission-critical programs, services, and resources are sustained and expanded so students receive the highest quality education that they really deserve," end quote. And he noted the, quote-unquote, "significant fiscal pressure." The supplemental budget will be funded with projected and unbudgeted revenue from the Fair Share Amendment, the state's 4% surtax on annual income over $1 million. The surtax is estimated to generate $2.7 billion in revenue this fiscal year, and collections have far exceeded projections in past years. The revenue source, which is only a few years old, has funded a huge swell of investments into education, including for universal free school meals, free community college, child care grants, and backfilling dollars needed to complete the state's obligations under the Student Opportunity Act for general K-12 funding. The governor is proposing the state distribute the $100 million on an enrollment basis to schools. Healey said it amounts to an average increase of $112 per student across all 319 school districts. The Massachusetts Teachers Association, the largest teachers union in Massachusetts, in a statement called the supplemental budget significant, but said, quote, "It will still not be enough to fully counterbalance the challenges facing our communities," end quote. The union said, quote, "Spiraling costs for health care and special education and the outdated limitations that Proposition 2.5 place on municipalities are forcing cities and towns to make decisions that are not in the best interest of students and families, end quote. Ainsbury Mayor Cassandra Gove, who was also president of the Mass Municipal Association, echoed this sentiment. She said, quote, as you and your team know, Governor, cities and towns in all corners of the Commonwealth are facing structural budget challenges that are impossible for us to solve on our own. These challenges are a direct result of a big storm, rising costs, and a limited ability for cities and towns to generate revenues, end quote. In the fiscal 2027 budget that Healey signed earlier this month, she and the legislature revived the Foundation Budget Review Commission, which will look at the formula that distributes state dollars to schools. School officials, municipal leaders, teachers, and students have been calling on the legislature and governor to act for years, saying the formula no longer works in a world of post-pandemic inflation. Lawmakers resisted acting until this year. They say the time is right now that the six-year Student Opportunity Act is fully implemented. Healey said she looks forward to the funding commission's work, but we can't wait, and she's proposing the supplemental budget now ahead of the start of next school year. She called on the legislature to act on it within the next month. Said Healey, quote, we know cities and towns are having to make some real-time decisions now for the fall, and I don't want to see us go backward. Having worked hard to get ourselves atop the national rankings for the first time in years in education, I don't want to see us go backwards, end quote. Up next, a healthy milestone. Granby Farm hosts celebration of Massachusetts HIP program's $100 million in produce sales. This story is by Emily Klein, who writes out of Granby. The smoke blown in from the Canadian wildfires cleared just in time for local farmers and state officials to celebrate a significant milestone in the popular nutrition incentive program known as HIP. The sale of $100 million in fresh, locally grown fruits and vegetables since the initiative launched 9 years ago. Just outside the fields of Red Fire Farm in Granby, local and state politicians reflected on 2017 collaboration that established the Massachusetts Healthy Incentive Program, or HIP, the nation's first local produce-based food assistance program. HIP Director Mia Cordobine said, quote, it's a program everyone can believe in, end quote. HIP was created to increase resident access to local produce and support small farms across the Commonwealth. It gives Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, enrollees extra funds for local foods. In return, farmers have a consistent client base and revenue stream. These transactions also stimulate the economy while keeping money in the state, officials said Thursday. Any person signed up for SNAP is automatically enrolled in HIP. Each month, participants receive a $40, $60, or $80 credit, depending on family size, for fresh fruits and vegetables at 500 pickup locations statewide, as long as 1 cent remains on their EBD card. Before it became one of the first farms to join HIP, Red Fire Farm co-owner Sarah Voylan said attendance at farmers' markets was dwindling. The program helped reverse that trend for the family-owned farm. Now, the farm sells around $2,000 in HIP money at each Springfield farmers' market and $1,000 per Northampton farmers' market. This does not include those who redeem their HIP benefits at the farm's headquarters at 7 Carver Street. I'm very proud of Massachusetts because I think the state and the people here make programs like HIP that are very creative for solving problems for farms and problems for the community, end quote, Vollin said. Western Mass in particular reaps HIP's rewards. The Massachusetts Food Access Report found that 48% of households in Franklin and Hampshire counties are food insecure. The same area has the highest percentage of farmland in the state, with 1,451 farms shared across both counties, according to the Massachusetts Department of Agricultural Resources. The Department of Transitional Assistance, or DTA Commissioner Michael Cole, said, quote, HIP provides a way for Massachusetts residents to stretch their dollar, but at its best, it's transformative, end quote. While farms and food assistance recipients directly benefit from HIP, the entire community also feels its impact. Ludlow Democratic State Senator Jake Oliveira notes that every dollar spent on HIP returns twofold in economic activity. He said, quote, the $100 million that we're celebrating today is $200 million of economic activity for farms across Massachusetts, end quote. HIP continues to grow despite changes to food assistance programs at the federal level. During the brief federal shutdown of SNAP in fall 2025, Massachusetts residents could still access their HIP credits. Most recently, 23 states adopted federal restrictions on SNAP benefits to limit purchases of candy, soda, or energy drinks. The change to food aid eligibility is part of the Make America Healthy Again campaign. Massachusetts, however, is focusing on expanding access to healthy foods instead of restricting purchases. The state will soon open a third round of applications for farms to join the HIP program. In 9 years, applications have opened twice in 2020 and 2022. Health and Human Services Secretary Kayam Mahania said, quote, "When programs are successful in Massachusetts, we don't run away from them like has been happening at the federal level," end quote. Cordobine regularly speaks to leaders in a dozen other states who want to bring a HIP model to their communities. There are 25 other states with dollar-matching systems that return every dollar spent on locally grown foods to the SNAP card, but none of them offer independent allowances like Massachusetts. And she said, quote, "They are jealous of what we have here. They are envious of the collaboration and coordination that is required in Massachusetts to make this program happen, and they want to see this kind of thing for their communities," end quote. Up next in the Athol Daily News, meet the moment, disability advocates urge at statewide session held in Weston, Mass. And this is the July 17th story by Samuel Galinas. Galinas writes out of Northampton, "Monica Samano, a 37-year-old East Hampton woman with disabilities, enjoys an active, independent life in her community, but she worries about what will happen when her mother and caregiver is no longer able to care for her. She said, quote, "I'd like to live in our house with people helping me, but I don't know if that will be possible. It is expensive," end quote. Jean Traver of Greenfield shares similar concerns for his son Noah, who is autistic. Traver wants more disability services available in Franklin County so Noah can remain in the community where he grew up. Currently, Noah travels to East Hampton for services at Riverside Industries, an organization that provides life skill development, day rehabilitation, and employment options for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Traver said, quote, "The vision that we have for Noah, and I believe he has for himself, is to stay in Greenfield to associate with his former high school classmates. Maybe get a job with one of them who knew him when he was in school. They would look out for him and really care for him," end quote. Samano and Traver were among dozens of people who shared their experiences during a Meeting the Moment listening session at the Northampton Senior Center Tuesday, hosted by the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Persons with Disabilities, a permanent 23-member independent state agency. The session brought together individuals with disabilities, families, advocates, service providers, and community leaders to discuss issues affecting the disability community across the Commonwealth. State Rep. Lindsay Sabadosa, a member of the commission, and State Senator Joe Comerford attended the event that is intended to inform lawmakers about how to meet the needs of Bay Staters with disabilities. The feedback provided in this and three other sessions taking place throughout the state will inform policy for the next legislative session. The event also featured a resource fair at which 30 organizations were present to provide information, services, and support for people with disabilities and their families. Speakers described barriers to inclusion in higher education, the workplace, and the broader community. Many cited shortages of accessible housing and transportation, while others called for increased funding for disability services and higher wages for caregivers. Participants represented a wide range of disabilities, including autism, deafness, and severe environmental sensitivities. Jonathan Ozek, founder and CEO of the Hear You Rise Foundation, advocated for more flexible workplaces for deaf and hard-of-hearing employees. Quote, "Flexibility can look like many things. It could be adjusting a process, remaking a requirement. It's asking, what do you need?" end quote, he said, urging employers to adopt more people-centered policies. Employment was also a recurring theme among autistic participants who stressed the importance of meaningful work and community inclusion. Matthew Mattingly, a retired multimedia director at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, said the university has failed for years to adequately address accessibility concerns for students and employees with disabilities. He said, quote, "The lack of accommodations at the university rises to the level of outright discrimination," end quote. Among the problems he cited were inadequate curb cuts, malfunctioning power-assisted doors, and delayed snow removal that has left students unable to access dormitories and dining facilities. He also criticized the university for failing to adequately consult people with disabilities when developing policies and procedures. In 2022, the advocacy group Access UMass submitted a 30-page report detailing those concerns and others. Mattingly said the university has offered lip service but produced few meaningful changes. Mattingly said, quote, "The Commonwealth prides itself on being open to all people, and the current situation on campus is a blight on those established values," end quote. In a statement, UMass spokesperson Emily Jess responded, saying, quote, "As noted on the Disability Services website, we urge anyone who experiences accessibility issues to report them to facilities management so they can be addressed," end quote. Eliza Lake, former executive director of Hilltown Community Health Centers, discussed the challenges facing rural health care. "Although about 10% of Massachusetts is rural," she said, "residents in those areas experience higher rates of heart disease, diabetes, and tobacco use." She said new federal funding will expand home health care and telehealth services over the next 5 years. Letitia Ward, a disabled woman, called for improved access to health care and nutrition programs while urging lawmakers to increase wages for caregivers. Joining the meeting via Zoom, Ally Room asked attendees to imagine registering for a conference, preparing for work, meeting friends, or simply shopping for groceries, only to end up in the emergency room after exposure to perfume or other fragrances. Room urged policymakers to promote scent-free public spaces. Addressing critics who may argue that fragrance-free policies would leave public restrooms smelling unpleasant, she said, quote, "The smell of poop has never killed anybody," end quote. Sabadosa said, quote, "Listening is one of our most important responsibilities as elected officials. These conversations are essential. They provide a roadmap for meaningful action and help us build a state that is more accessible, inclusive, and responsive to everyone," end quote. Up next, Allison Kuznets, the State House News Service, has this story. Advocates urge supplemental funding for Massachusetts SNAP caseworkers. Days after Governor Murray Haley signed the new state budget, food security advocates are already asking for supplemental funding to shore up the workforce that helps vulnerable residents access Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits. Well, this story by Kuznets is the July 17th edition. In their budgets, both Haley and the Senate sought about $148 million for caseworkers at the Department of Transitional Assistance, or DTA. With the compromise budget Haley signed last week incorporated a lower funding level, about $122 million that was supported in the House budget. Leron Make, Project Bread's distributor or director of public policy, said, quote, "To be honest, we're still not sure what happened in the final budget. It was very surprising," end quote. Nearly one in seven Massachusetts residents receives SNAP benefits, including children, older adults, people with disabilities, and veterans. But despite rising food insecurity, advocates say DTA is serving fewer residents due to stiffening federal eligibility parameters, plus a strained state workforce that cannot keep up with the paperwork and phone calls to certify households eligible for SNAP benefits. Marking a record high, around 40% of Massachusetts households last year experienced food insecurity, according to a report from the Greater Boston Food Bank and Mass General Brigham. The Massachusetts Law Reform Institute and the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center have warned that approximately 150 DTA caseworkers could be laid off at the $122 million funding level, creating greater turmoil for residents whose calls to seek SNAP benefits or update personal information have gone largely unanswered. DTA spokesperson Cecile Avila said Friday there are no plans to terminate staff. The department has hired 78 new employees in the past 6 months and is working to backfill 42 vacancies, Avila said. But advocates said the hiring push is inadequate when it comes to growing the workforce, bolstering access to benefits, and ensuring Massachusetts can lower its SNAP benefit error rate that measures how accurately state agencies determine household eligibility and benefit amounts. Starting in October 2027, the state could lose hundreds of millions of dollars for posting a high error rate under the federal One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Vicki Negus, senior economic justice advocate at the Massachusetts Law Reform Institute, said she is, quote, "relieved and really glad," end quote, to hear there will be no layoffs. But conversations about potential layoffs are really beside the point, she said. Negus said, quote, "The point here is that in Massachusetts, residents have not been able to and today cannot get the help that they need when they need it in the vast majority of the time because there are not enough staff to do the work. That's the bottom line, and the fiscal 27 budget did not make investments to address that. And as of today, there is no plan to systemically address the largest staff crisis we have had in over a decade in Massachusetts," end quote. Negus said the overwhelming majority of SNAP recipients who need to talk to a caseworker are automatically disconnected. She estimates the DTA needs to hire another 100 to 200 caseworkers to keep up with demand and process expanded eligibility criteria and work requirements. Though she added, quote, "there's a lot of variables that go into that answer, like how much is the workload that each worker has to carry," end quote. The legislature routinely underfunds accounts in the annual budget and injects more money through supplemental packages. The fiscal year 2026 budget allocated just over $101 million for DTA caseworkers, with the account receiving an extra $41.7 million from the supplemental budget Haley signed in June. Quote, "I think if the administration is committed to not laying anyone off, the pathway we see where that's most fruitful is for some sort of supplemental budget that's passed for fiscal 27 sometime in the next few months," end quote, said Adam Jones, a senior policy analyst at Mass Budget. Jones added, quote, "I think the baseline needs to be somewhere in the $26 million range and then above that to actually kind of get our call success rate higher than it currently is," end quote. Make said the new cohort of nearly 80 DTA caseworkers took about 4 months to be fully integrated into the agency. Said Mink, quote, "Let's say very ideally, if the governor was to propose something next week, unfortunately, we know the legislature moves slowly. So a few months go by before that passes, and then we're talking about another 4 or 5 months before all those new caseworkers are on the phone line. That makes it a lot harder for us to bring down that payment error rate for that federal cost, and it continues to have more people suffering this access crisis and dropping off the program," end quote. A spokesperson for the Executive Office of Health and Human Services did not directly answer a State Health News Service question about whether the governor intends to file a supplemental budget for DTA caseworkers. The spokesperson said on Tuesday, quote, "The Healy-Driscoll administration is committed to ensuring DTA has the resources and staff needed to serve the people of Massachusetts, particularly as the Trump administration is trying to kick hundreds of thousands of people off SNAP. We will continue to assess the department's needs," end quote. The House Ways and Means Committee felt the $122 million allocation for fiscal year 2027 was, quote, "appropriate given the fiscal constraints the Commonwealth is under," end quote, spokesperson Blake Weber said. Should Healy file a supplemental budget, Weber said the panel, quote, "will evaluate and entertain that request," end quote. Senate Ways and Means Committee spokesperson Sean Fitzgerald also pointed to resource constraints in fiscal 27, saying, quote, "We remain committed to partnering with the administration to continue supporting DTA and its caseworkers as we work collectively to protect access to SNAP for our most vulnerable residents and households," end quote. Up next in the Athol Daily News, this July 16th story by Ryan Ames, "Letting It Fly. Golfer Bill Wonka wins car with hole-in-one at fundraiser for Senior Center." Out of Northampton, a hole-in-one is the ultimate accomplishment in the game of golf, given its rarity and level of difficulty to accomplish. That is, for most amateur golfers. Bill Wonka of Templeton earned an ace at last month's Swing for Seniors 3 fundraiser golf tournament to benefit the Northampton Senior Center at St. Anne Country Club in Feeding Hills for Wonka's 26th career hole-in-one. While sinking aces is nothing new for Wonka, his latest hole-in-one came with an extra caveat, a brand new car. Wonka said, quote, "I usually never go first. I always let everyone go first to see where they hit. And I went first with my 2-wood and put it right down the middle and right in the cup," end quote. Wonka won a 2026 Subaru Impreza awarded by Berdera Subaru in West Springfield for finding the bottom of the cup from the tee box at the par 3 184-yard 15th hole at St. Anne Country Club. Quote, "I was shocked. I could not play the next 3 holes. I was so nervous," end quote, Wonka said. He said he plans to give the car to his wife, as he already owns 2 vehicles. His ace was actually the second on that hole during the fundraiser, but the first hole-in-one was from a closer tee box, which did not fall within the parameters of the contest. Joanne Brooks, a co-chair of the fundraiser, said this year's event raised $11,800 that will be allocated primarily for the Senior Center's transportation program. Quote, "If they need anything else, we help supplement their funding for whatever else we can supplement their funding for, because funding isn't all there all the time," end quote. This year's fundraiser marked the 3rd straight year of the event, which has raised about $43,000 since its inception. While participants from golfers remained consistent across the 3 tournaments, Brooks said sponsorship involvement dipped this year. Brooks said, quote, "If we would have had the same sponsors as we were able to get last year, we would have made a little bit more this year than last year, but we look at it as anything we make is a help to the Senior Center," end quote. It is not yet official if the fundraiser will return for a 4th year next summer. But in the meantime, Wonka, who is in his late 60s, will have a lasting memory from this year's fundraiser. Said Wonka, quote, "It's all luck. It's not how you play. It's all luck. You hit the club, keep your head down, and let the ball go," end quote. A real quick look ahead at the weather forecast for the Athol area. Monday, July 20th, mostly sunny skies, a high of 80 degrees. PM thunderstorms move in on Tuesday the 21st with a high of 77 and a low of 66. It's partly sunny skies. Also partly cloudy skies on Wednesday the 22nd with thunderstorms and a high of 81. On Thursday the 23rd, it's sunny with a high of 79 and a low of 53. And the temperatures reach back up into the 80s on Friday the 24th, a high of 82, a low of 57, and mostly sunny skies. And a high of 84, a low of 60, and partly cloudy skies on Saturday the 25th. And on Sunday the 26th, a high of 83, a low of 63, and partly cloudy skies. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Walter Bird. Thank you for listening.
When someone you know is struggling with vision loss, it can be challenging. But the Mass Commission for the Blind is here to help. We'll connect them to resources that will help them plan for the future with new skills and assistive technology. Find out if they're eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.